Welcome to the Everyday Bowhunter. I'm your host, Mike Manley, retired Green Beret turned bowhunter, joined by my brother, Dan Zima. We're here to share tips, stories, and talk gear, all from our unique points of view. Whether you're just starting out or you're a seasoned bowhunter, I think you're going to like it. So let's go. All right, Dan, here we are, episode 19. We've had a big delay between episodes here, but life got in the way, and we talk about dog show, dodgeball for me.
Dip, dive, duck, dodge, dive, yes. Dodge.
Yeah, so
dive.
My son Trevor is at Penn State. This final year is graduating May 5th. I'm looking forward to that. But he is on the Penn State dodgeball team. It's a club sport, but we went down to James Madison University, watched them duke it out with James Madison, Virginia, Maryland, and some other teams. That was cool.
Yeah.
But this past weekend, they went to Ohio State in Columbus, Ohio, for the Nationals, and they got to the Sweet 16 and they lost. So, it happens, you know. But
at least he's having fun doing it.
Yeah. Oh, it was fun to watch, and those kids, man, some of those kids are getting pelted in the head. even the camera, they live streamed on YouTube, yeah. Like each court and stuff, and they had commentators, which were kids, so that made it fun.
More fun, yeah.
But the camera and the commentators got smoked a couple times, so that's entertaining.
Yeah.
So I like that.
It's kind of bordering on comical. Dodgeball, you know what I mean?
Not just
because of the movie, but
God, they take it very seriously.
Well, I get that, but
I swear, some of these kids are in the Matrix. So there'll be like one kid left, and they'll have six balls coming at them, and they'll freaking dodge every one of them.
Yeah,
you know, it's just, and they catch one
like serious good peripheral vision and stuff
just,
going on.
The reflexes on some of these kids
are awesome.
They're awesome. That's kind of my boy's niche is as a defensive player, okay. You know, with catching and stuff, his shoulder's kind of messed up, so he's not throwing real hard.
Yeah,
but he caught a bunch of balls during it, so that was cool. But it's always just like, oh, he got out. But you know, as long as he's not the first one out, that's all I care about.
If you're not first, you're last, Ricky Bobby.
Yes, and the one thing about dodgeball is, it doesn't matter how good you think you are, you can go out right from the very beginning.
Yeah.
The ball doesn't care.
That's funny.
So as far as you went, did
I did? Oh man, we've been traveling nonstop. It's been 3 weeks back to back. All right, so we went down to Doswell, Virginia, for Pointer National, which was a great experience. We actually first time taking our camper, we got to stay right there on site. That was great. Instead of the traveling back and forth, you know, half hour each way to a hotel, then you're missing out on the evening festivities. Like, because you know, last year we were down in Perry, Georgia for the National. This year it was up in Doswell, Virginia. But every night we'd have to leave. Well, we were missing the family style cookouts that was happening between just the club members
just
and
the networking stuff.
Yeah. And we got to we became members of the American Pointer Club, got to go to a meeting and actually do some events, went to a banquet and everything. It was really cool. It was a great experience. There was a lot of entries, a lot of dogs. Our dog's only two, so she's not fully mature. You know, we're not there yet. Mm-hmm. And that kind of helped us know that. But the following weekend, we went up to West Springfield, Massachusetts. So going to Virginia, we were there for almost a week. Turn around, come home, work a couple days, and then headed north to Massachusetts. It was a marathon, let's just say that, and getting up past New York City. But
That actually postponed our podcast because he ended up staying late and then being worn out from
What happened was she did really well. Okay, mm-hmm. Both days up there. Saturday she won the breed, and then she's also an owner handler, so she won that breed, of course, too, owner handler breed, but then went to we call it group, so it's all sporting dogs. Mm-hmm. Every breed of sporting dog then goes to group. She made it to that. Got placed second in group.
Wow.
And then Sunday, the same thing happened. So when you go to group, that's not till later in the day. So we never even got to leave Massachusetts till 6-7 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a 6-7 hour drive back home. So it was a long night. And then to turn around, and our local show was in Harrisburg at this farm show complex.
Yeah.
The following weekend. So it was just back to back to back. I think coming off the national really helped us with the Massachusetts show because she got some notoriety up at the national and then was a win because we were in a rut there for a little bit. So she did really well.
And they
really
proud of her. They recognize her.
Yes, that's it. And, you know, I'm really proud of my wife. I'm proud of the pup. It's pretty cool. And then, you know, just getting caught up on yard work and stuff like that. And
we kept missing each other. I had something going on one day. He'd had something going on the other day. I had two exercises this week for work.
And right now the grass is growing like crazy. Yeah. So you're mowing twice a week. You know, it is what it is.
Not the way I mowed this week.
Oh, you mowed her.
I mowed her low. So anyway, that's awesome. That's something that, you know, it really takes a lot of work, and you guys put a lot of work into it.
Hey, you know, traveling can be fun. And here's the thing. Me and my wife get to spend some real good quality time together, and it really helps us. Mm-hmm. You know, because just being at home, that's just normal relationship stuff. Mm-hmm. But actually going and being part of something that's bigger than us, but spending that time equally together, it's really good for us, and I really appreciate it. I'm very blessed, and it's great.
Yeah, we liked a little trip down to James Madison University. It's pretty nice. Pretty nice.
Nice university?
Hmm?
Nice university?
Yeah, the campus is really nice. Yeah.
Campus, that's the word I was looking for.
It seems really nice. And the area around it, man, we had some great restaurants and stuff that we just stumbled upon. But anyway.
How was the view?
What's that?
Never mind.
The view?
Anyway.
I'm sorry, honey. He made me do it.
Listener questions?
So, well, before we get into listener questions,
okay.
Not real quick. One of the things that we were kind of doing last night, back and forth, we can talk about this in advance.
The e-bike. Yeah, yeah.
So Dan's sending me, starting off the evening, I'm getting Amazon, like, links from him with e-bikes on it. Because in Pennsylvania, and correct me if I'm wrong, the DNCR and the Game Commission and everything have rules that it's not considered a full electric bike, whatever, by their standards, and you can use it on trails and stuff like that, like a regular bicycle on public land, if it's 750 watt or less and
has pedal assist
and it's under 100 pounds.
Okay, that and under max, it's max speed 20 miles an hour. But there is a stipulation. That's not for all public land. That's for state forest land only.
Yeah.
State game lands, it's a no-no. You cannot have them.
Oh.
So,
yeah. Well, that's a good
thing.
There's
that, yeah.
Because I was going to do it.
And we hunt, majority of our style of hunting and our location of hunting is in state forest. So
when Dan's showing me this, and he's showing me some nice bikes, got good reviews and stuff, and I'm like showing my wife, and I said, hey, you know, tax return.
Yeah. Talk her into it a little bit.
I think we might be on the way.
That's the thing. You can get so much more use out of it than just hunting. But me personally, I'm thinking about my truck sits up a little bit. So getting it in and out of the truck, do I want a foldable? Do I want this? I'm actually going more towards size-wise, 20-inch bike, like a BMX-style bike versus the mountain bike. I got that torn muscle in my shoulder. I want something small and compact that I can just kind of get up into the truck where I don't have to stretch.
So let's talk about why we're talking about e-bikes. And it's not for personal enjoyment as much as we have quite a few hunting areas that we're identifying that it's a hike. And sometimes time equity is very important when you want to make the most of your hunting time. You don't want to spend all your time hiking and getting to the spot.
And in the morning, sleep recovery, you're going to lose 2 hours of sleep.
I mean,
you know?
We are already on a short sleep pattern. We are go.
Yes.
And getting some of these spots, not every spot is even feasible for an e-bike anyway. But
one spot's 2 miles in. Mm-hmm. Another spot is possibly out to the gas line from up and out of the promised land there, past that gate.
There's a couple spots that could be a couple miles.
5-6 miles out.
And the reason why they're so far is because they're gated.
And they're closed and during our season.
And those gates are closed during the season, and you have to walk or have a bike.
A bike, right.
So, and people even ride horses on those things.
Yes, they do.
Yep.
So, I love the idea. And what you said about time equity is the biggest factor for me. Mm-hmm. If I can get an extra hour of sleep or preserve myself for the next 3 days of hunting and not smoke myself on that first day, because curiosity gets the best of us and we want to get out to that spot that's 2 miles out because we want to know what's happening out there. And, you know, cell phone reception ain't the best. So trail cam, you know, cell cams aren't kind of your best option out there. You physically have to get out there. So this is going to benefit us greatly. Like mm-hmm. I said, I personally am going to go with the smaller style bike. It's my first bike, e-bike.
Yeah.
Let's try this out first before I go spending more money, you know, mm-hmm. on something bigger, better, whatever, you know. But I want to give this a trial run and see what. And this weekend, I'm working 2 12-hour shifts. I'm going to have the money to pay for it, mm-hmm. and I'm going to make the purchase while I'm at work this weekend.
And let's also talk about.
So I have it for spring.
We are not talking about like massively expensive bikes.
No,
we're talking about under $1,000.
Under $1,000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about cheaper e-bikes that are. Or what you find on Amazon, and not like
well, the one I
not
found,
the Rambo bikes that are $5,000 a piece.
Right, right. I found it's like a Salomon or something like that, and it's $799. It's foldable, 750 watt. You know, pedal assist. It's got gear on it. What's weird is on a BMX style bike, having that 7-speed gear like a mountain bike is going to be a little bit to get used to. But I'm really looking forward to this. This is a new chapter of hunting for us, and it kind of opens up some doors. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm excited about giving it a shot. We'll see if we actually pull the trigger.
Well, I know I am.
Yeah, I know you are. Yeah, I really want to. I mean, we want to do it and enjoy like long treks and everything too.
Yeah,
and we would pedal most of the time. It's just kind of when you hit those really big inclines and stuff.
My wife said, hey, when we go to the dog shows, sometimes from arena to where the camper's at, pretty far distance, you know, couple hundred yards or whatever, even more. She's like, hey, you know, you can go check ring times, burn down on the bike real quick, get back. Hey, you need to get ready. Chalk her up. Let's go. You know, one of them deals. Yeah. It's beneficial. So that's pretty cool.
I'm wondering, since your last name Zimmer, how long it would take you to wipe out?
The first day.
There's a good chance. There's a good chance Dan's going down.
I'll have
probably going to be a face injury.
I'm going to have to get a motorcycle helmet, elbow pads, knee pads.
Well, that one bike you were looking at had the helmet.
Dude,
it's like a red helmet.
It's a free gift that comes with.
It's perfect for you. I want to see that. I want to see that on you.
Don't be surprised if I actually wear it. I've hit my head too many times.
Now so we're looking at e-bikes to try to be more economical with our time and get to places. And not just for hunting, but also for scouting, because there's some areas that we hunt in that just nobody goes to. But then the reason is because it's so difficult to get to.
So how many of you have hoofed it in somewhere, a mile and a half, 2 miles, in the middle of summer scouting? And you're sweating, you're hot, and all you're thinking about is, dude, I got to walk all the way back. But you don't. You get on that thing. Get going 20 mile an hour, get that breeze going on you, cool you off. But you're not, a lot of it is preserving that energy to keep doing other things.
So, I mean, and also there's two ways to look at it. One, you've gone in 2 miles, 3 miles, whatever it is, and you didn't find crap for sign.
Yeah.
And now you're like, I wasted all my day scouting, and now from walking and stuff, and now I wasted a day of scouting.
That actually happened to us last year. Mm-hmm. And we went in. We got tore up by bugs. We had had enough, and we got back. We had plenty of time to go to a different spot. We were smoked, sweated up to the specific spot that we want to get the e-bikes
for. So if you didn't see this, the earlier season, preseason, that was the first day of archery. First day of archery.
Yeah.
So first day of archery season last year, Dan and I hoofed it into this area that I had e-scouted and was kind of interested in. We get there. but we are just getting devastated.
There's like a cloud of bugs around us at all times.
It was unbelievable. It's the worst I've ever experienced in my life.
Yeah, same.
Literally, not exaggeration. And
I've been in Canada.
And when Dan's like, you know, you want to, I said, Dan, keep moving. Every time he'd stop to look at some deer sign, I'd say, go. Nope, forget it. Go. Stop it.
Oh.
So, yeah, That's one of those things. I mean, that comes with hunting anyway, and then you're not always going to be able to use an e-bike, but when you can...
Yeah, I don't always want to use it. I want to put the work and the effort into some of these spots, and because, you know, there's a reward there to that, in that physical activity and being out and experiencing Mother Nature like that, and I don't want to abuse it. I just want a little help here and there.
Well, they do these logging trails and stuff, and... You're not getting back them, unless you're huffing it.
Yeah.
And that's a great option. But that leads me into the first listener question, which came via Instagram. And kind of along that subject line about, you know, where to hunt and stuff. The listener, and I'm sorry if I forget your name. I'm terrible about that. But you asked, okay, what do we think of leased hunts, guided hunts? What do we think of high fence hunting? You know, what are our opinions on that stuff? And we really didn't talk too deeply about that. And I don't know 100% where Dan lies on this, but I mean, do you want to start or do you want me to start?
Yeah, I mean, okay, high fence hunt, I'm not really for that. It's not my thing. Fair chase is minimum in that situation. I like the challenge. If you got the money, do it. Go do it. Do whatever you want to do. You know, leased hunting. I like leased hunting. We've done it in the right situation with the right other leasers, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. It opens up different opportunities for you, and with other opportunities means you're hunting more, and that's great. So I'm all for that. And what's the other one? So you got high fence, you got leased hunting,
guided.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know a whole lot about it. I do know that there's a pretty big difference from full-blown guided hunts, and then there's drop camp type stuff where guides kind of put you in the right area and say, you can go this way, and this way.
I like that.
I would be interested in doing, going up to Lake Idaho, doing a drop camp, you know, where they give you a horse and you have a drop camp
that
you keep coming back to with a GPS. And mm-hmm. Yeah. Dad, they loved that. Mm-hmm. I would love to do that someday. So, yeah, I'm for that. Now, a full-blown guide hunt, we kind of did that in Texas, mm-hmm. where you have a guy over your shoulder pointing out deer saying, no, you can't shoot that one. No, you can't. Oh, that one you can shoot. You know, this, yeah. that.
Oh, that's a call buck. You can shoot him.
Yeah. I mean, it was a great experience. Mm-hmm. I would never... Hey, you know, if you got the money, again, mm-hmm. if you want to do it, do it. You should experience it. Mm-hmm. I'm not against it in that way. You should be able to experience anything and then make that opinion for yourself.
Yep.
But that's where I stand with those. But at the end of the day, all of those things, you're still hunting.
So I had talked to you about this, but one of my things is for the sport, you know, bow hunting or hunting period, we are losing hunters every year. You know, people are aging out of it and stuff. And we need a youth movement. So, if you're just getting started and that's the thing that, you know, introduces you to hunting and that's the kind of thing that you like and that's getting you out and it's getting you hunting for any of it, do it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be something, hit my microphone, it doesn't have to be something we like.
Yeah.
It's not about what I like or he likes. The thing is that I don't disapprove of that. That might not work for me. Like I'm almost anal about it. I don't even like hunting around the fields near where our camp is because of I want more of a challenge. I like the challenge. If I don't get a deer, that doesn't bother me. I want the mm-hmm. challenge of it.
Here's real quick too. I just wanted to, not to cut you. I apologize. If the opportunity arises, sometimes it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. Mm-hmm. Go have that experience.
Yeah.
So, sorry. I just need to say that.
Dan and I talked, he talked about the guided hunt we did in Texas. So I got a free veteran hunt and was able to take somebody. And I took Dan with me and the family that hosted us there on the ranch in Texas.
Salt of the earth.
They were fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. After the fact, we were kind of, I don't like somebody telling me what I can shoot. And, you know, they'd kind of turn on the feeders and the deer would come in. So it was kind of like, oh, this is like a deer farm.
But you know, in our region, we can't use baiting and feed, stuff like that. So we're not used to that. So it was foreign to us too. So maybe we're a little ignorant to that fact, but
Yeah. But I was, you know, like I said, if that's what makes you happy when hunting, or that's the only opportunity you have when hunting, I'm 100% for it. I think we need people to hunt, and any opportunity you get to hunt, and there's a lot more things popping up too, where there's like parks and stuff in really urban areas where the deer are getting overpopulated here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And they're doing special hunts, lottery picks and stuff.
Yeah, Chester County. Yeah.
Dude, I'd go down there and shoot a nice buck or even a couple doe. That'd be great, you know. That's an opportunity, you know, and that's, you're still out there by yourself. I don't like anybody like around me. I don't like anybody around me. I'm kind of a douche.
You're a little snooty.
I don't want nobody near me. Get away from me when I'm hunting. I like to be out solo by myself. I like to pretend I'm the only one there when I know I'm not. But anyway, like I said, you got to do what makes you happy. Guided hunts, if at least land, there's nothing, I mean, hunt lease land is just for a lot of people, that's the only option.
Yeah.
You know, different states, they don't have a lot of public land, and they only have lease land or private farms or whatever, you know. And if that's where you've got to hunt, do it, man. You know,
we live in a state that is just miles and miles and miles of state forest. We have a lot of state game lands. We have a lot of public land here in Pennsylvania. We are truly blessed here. Mm-hmm. A lot of you guys out of state that might not have the opportunities that we do. Mm-hmm. So harness any opportunity that you can get.
Yeah, absolutely.
If it gets you out there hunting, you have to gain experience somehow. And if those are your segue into bigger and better things, do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think we hit that one.
Yeah.
So the next question I got was kind of a broad question, but we can kind of talk about it, was when do you start preparing for the season?
That's a really good question. We actually were talking about this prior, and it's pretty broad. So me personally, the end of the season, end of archery season, or actually which goes into rifle, end of rifle season, after that I take a little break, because we said this in another podcast, me and him travel a lot. We're away from our families a lot in hunting season. I mean, it's almost, 14 weeks in a row we're away from weekends and this and that. We're away from our families. So I take a little break.
I would like a couple more weeks added to that.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't argue with it. I'm not going to turn it down. But I take some time away from hunting. I take, you know, and then I got to spend time with my family and get back into things. I got to take care of the house, things that I've neglected for the last 3 months. So then I kind of gradually start getting into it. If it's even just as far as maybe buying some new clothing, you know, getting some new arrows, new broadheads, you know, different things that I'll start doing and kind of working my way back into shape, archery mentality, shooting, muscle memory, all that. And then by, I'd say, you know, June, I'm really getting into the scouting and shooting a lot. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of that's me.
Yeah, I think that when you get done the season, sometimes you're a little burnt.
Yeah, I'm burnt out.
Sometimes you're a little burnt, and you do need to reengage the family and their stuff. Your life is not hunting. You've got other things going on. It seems like for me, especially like the last few weeks, every time I wanted to go do something, you know, to shoot my bow, to go scouting, whatever, the weather has not cooperated lately at all.
Oh, on weekends. Rain.
Weekends, more wind, rain. And I mean, massive high winds and everything. If you're here in the U.S., you know how the weather's been.
Yeah.
It's been crap. So, but then other things, you know, family events, things like that. Like I said, my son's dodgeball and stuff, you know.
Dog shows.
You know, you got to make time for your family. But I would say that once we get to, because it's kind of an annual ritual for us to go to the Great American Outdoor Show, because it's right in our backyard here, you know, up in Harrisburg. It's for us, it's about a 40-minute drive, basically, to get up there. So it's not a big deal. Going to the outdoor show sparks it.
It does. It really lights a fire right back in. You get in there, and it's just like,
you see all that stuff, hunting stuff, all the different new stuff that's there and everything. You're like, yeah. And then this year I bought the new, you know, Matthews lift bow. Yeah. I got arrows from Sirius Archery. I went and I went to Lancaster Archery and I got some arrows and I built some other arrows to, yeah, to have them testing. I just got new broadheads. Yeah. They're sitting right over here beside us. And which are the Trifecta, if you've never heard of them. I'm trying the Trifectas.
They're thick.
Yeah, they are. They're 150 grain, so.
Yeah, they're.
But anyway, so it's, I do that, and I believe that really once you get into, you want to be shooting and stuff and trying to gradually get into it, and I wish I was doing a lot more than I am shooting-wise and stuff. Just been bad luck with the weather, like I said, and everything. But once you hit turkey.
Yeah.
And you get out there and you get in the woods and you start seeing that deer sign out there while you're turkey hunting because, yeah, you know, that usually happens when you're out there, yeah, right? And I start looking at areas where I have cameras and stuff and want to see that movement start. You see, one thing I've learned is that I have cameras that have been set up basically in the same spots for over, you know, year and a half now. Yep. And the cycle of time, like this time period right now, I'm barely seeing any deer on these cameras at all. I might see a pair of doe. In fact, I got this great picture of these two doe just like body to body, mm-hmm, and like three pictures of them just like staying together and kind of licking, yeah, each other and cleaning each other. So it was kind of cool. But other than that, mm-hmm, nothing. It happened to me last year too, this time of year, and coming into June when they're, like you're saying, when they're getting into velvet and stuff, yep, that's when all of a sudden they start popping on camera. So they're changing those patterns,
yep,
through the year, and that understanding those patterns has helped me a lot, because come season, I have mapped out by the time season starts my plan. And what I did last year was to have multiple spots identified and the time of year that I wanted to hunt those spots, right, as well. So based on these patterns that I'm seeing of deer, and we've hunted these areas for years and years and years in these mountains that we hunt. So we have a good idea of where to go and everything. So I think that, preparation kicks up around turkey and then just continues to build until we hit that first day of archery.
So, right, right.
Yeah. I love it that much. Now, not everybody, you know, is so into archery hunting that they're constantly at it. You know, mm-hmm, sometimes your wife will yell at you and tell you better get, start thinking about other things in archery.
Yeah.
It happens. But
the funny story, our mom yelled at our dad and said, "Look what you did to these boys." Getting us into hunting, getting, yeah, us into archery hunting. Mm-hmm. And he knew damn well that it's an obsession. Mm-hmm. And us being who we are and how we are, it became an obsession for us. Mm-hmm. And it's not his fault. I love him for getting us into hunting. Mm-hmm. He gave us some truly great opportunities, but
yeah. But hey, if you like the content, just interrupt what we're doing right now a little bit. If you like the content, if you enjoy our podcast, you want to listen to it more, you want to watch it more on YouTube, wherever you're consuming it, please follow us. Please subscribe. It would really, really help us out. We'd love to have you back for more videos. And if you don't mind, you know, hop on there and give us a 5-star review on, you know, Spotify or Apple Podcasts, whatever. That would really, really help us out, wherever you listen.
Yeah.
But talk about turkey, right? So I got a turkey vest from Sitka, mm-hmm, the Equinox turkey vest, and now Dan's drooling on it.
Yeah, a little bit. I've been looking at it for a couple of years now, thinking about getting. I'm in the market for a new vest, mm-hmm, and I've been really kind of scoping this thing. Got to throw it on, get my hands on it. There's a lot to like, and very little to not like about it, but. Yeah.
They put some thought into it.
Like, mm-hmm, even so with my current vest, there's my slate call or my glass call. Mm-hmm. Getting it unzipped is a pain in the butt. Mm-hmm. I have to reach my other hand. So now if you're holding your shotgun, you got to put your shotgun down and hold it to unzip it to get it out.
Well, this vest has magnets there.
And man, I fell in love with that part of it instantly.
Quiet.
Has your gobble shaker tube holder or box call. Mm-hmm. You know, if you got the old box call thing, it's really well thought out. It has a backpack built into it, a seat built into it that's adjustable and cinchable.
Hydration compatible.
It has some orange that kind of pops out of it for when you're mobile when you're moving, and stuff like that. I mean, it's really well thought out. It's light. The back in the backing of it has some nice padding. It has some crazy tethers on it. I don't know if one of it's for your decoys to hang off of. I have to research it more. I've been looking at it for 2 years and still don't know what they're for. That's on me. But it was just, I've been looking at it, but the price point of it is what deterred me. At $239.99, whatever it is.
Like I said, they just had it on sale.
It's really nice. Yeah. I'm pretty impressed. So
now, I've been kind of, since I test a lot of hunting clothing, I've been kind of obsessed with camo and the advanced camo that helps you for whether it's turkey hunting. I just posted a video on YouTube, best camo for turkey hunting, what I like to do. Of course, you know, I'm not a turkey expert, but I do a lot of research on this stuff, and I might have been in the Army a day or two. But anyway, I have a pretty good, you've done a lot of research on turkey vision and stuff. And I think the one thing that that really got me when I was researching turkey vision, Dan, is, and I did not know this, I took it for granted, much like deer, movement is the number one killer.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. But they have monocular vision.
Yeah, you were saying.
Yeah, right. That, monocular vision, and they have a 270-degree arc of vision. So when they're doing that head bobbing stuff, that's helping them get depth perception on you. And they, as they move their head around, they can almost have a 360-degree view of the world. And then when they do bring their eyes together and they focus on you, you're done. You're toast.
So Dad's a great turkey hunter. Mm-hmm. And as a kid growing up, there's one thing that rings true in my brain every time that I'm turkey hunting. Don't move a muscle. I always remember, do not move. They're going to see you. Mm-hmm. Don't move. Don't move. Don't move. He drilled it into me.
But no, I almost forgot what I was going to say. So the thing that stuck out to me the most with this is because of their photoreceptors they have, the rods and cones, how they have it. They see the world so vividly. We talk about how deer can see UV brighteners.
Yeah.
They can see them even better. Wow. So if you're washing your hunting clothes in Tide or anything that has brighteners in it, it's almost like putting
neon on.
Neon on you, because they're going to see that. Yeah. So I thought that was
pretty interesting.
I did not know that before that they could also see on the UV spectrum. So that's a big deal. So making sure that I'm washing my clothes in the no scent, no brightener stuff that I use for deer. Yeah. But so leading into that, talking about deer hunting here, the other question that we got was, how seriously do we take scent control?
Very. There's no way around it. We can play. All right, so where we hunt, we're in a wind factory up there, and it's always shifting and changing. So our number one defense is scent control, and we have to be very conscious of it. I mean, scent control goes a long way, not just clothing. It's when you're walking in, not touching twigs, not touching leaves, not touching trees, and this and that. Just really keeping your hands to yourself. Get to your spot. Do your hunting. But scent control, cinching up, covering, you know, anywhere that you have access points for it to escape. So me being on the ground, it's imperative that I practice scent control. You being above maybe a scent zone, you know what I mean? Has a little, being up, elevated.
That helps you a little bit.
It helps a little bit, yeah. But still, in my opinion, it is the most important aspect of my style of hunting.
So one of the things that I keep kind of going through is I'm planning out how I'm hunting lately, because I've taken it a lot more seriously, is that you need to do everything right, and even then they can beat you.
Yeah.
Right? All you're looking for, so you can't beat a deer's nose. You can do scent control you want, but given the right wind and shift or whatever, they're gonna still smell you. All you're trying to do with scent control, in my opinion, this is Mike's opinion, is get those extra seconds of indecision for the deer.
Yeah.
Like, hey, what's that? Oh, whack. Got him.
Yeah. You know? I mean, it's simple things. Not walking on a deer trail. Like, you know,
you should not walk on the deer trail to your spot that you expect the deer to come down.
Yeah.
That's not a good idea.
That's just one aspect of it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So you look at a multiple, it's a multifaceted approach to things, right? Wash your clothes in scent-free stuff, right? Wash your body in scent-free stuff. Wash your hair is one of the biggest things.
Yeah.
Your breath is the biggest scent factory you got in your whole body.
Beard and mustache.
Right. And so you do that stuff right. You keep your clothes, you spray your stuff down, you know, with scent-free stuff to try to minimize that scent. Like I said, you're minimizing it. You're not...
Spray your boots. Spray the bottom of your
feet. One of the things that I saw a guy talked about, it was John Eberhardt. He said the thing that people fail to focus on when it comes to scent control, they'll do all the stuff with their body, all the stuff with their clothes, and they'll let their pack stink and stink and stink.
Yeah.
And never clean it, never do anything for scent control for their pack. So I started really focusing on spraying down everything. I sprayed out my tree stands, everything.
Think about all the times you're pulling scents and lures and stuff in and out of that bag.
Yeah. And no matter what you have, it could be a snack, whatever.
Yeah. Well, that too. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think, so you do that stuff. Then you have wind direction. You play the winds. So you make sure that you're always downwind of where you expect the deer to come. Yeah. And then you have to factor in thermals if you are in hill country or mountains, because that becomes a factor, not as big of a factor in your flatland stuff.
I gave up on the wind this year. I'd throw milkweed and 1 minute it's going that way, 1 minute it's going that way, 1 minute it's going that way, and I went.
He's saying it. There's spots, we have so many, they call them thermal hubs.
It's
right?
Just swirling.
There's so many places where they have these thermal hubs that the wind is just swirling in there so much that you're not gonna beat it. So the best thing you can do is personal scent control.
Yeah.
So like I said, you're not gonna beat a deer's nose, but what you can do is minimize your signature. That's what I always like to say. You're minimizing your signature so that you get that extra few seconds of indecision by the deer walking in. It's like, hey, what's that smell? Whack, he's down.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the same thing goes for camouflage, in my opinion. You know, people say, oh, I can wear regular clothes. I don't have to wear camouflage for deer. They're colorblind. Well, they're not colorblind. They're red-green colorblind. But they see movement incredibly. And the thing that I think that gives you extra seconds in the stand, it happened to me this year, as a matter of fact, when a deer looks at you and is trying to figure you out what you are, the more camouflaged you are and how you match that environment, the more times they're going to say, oh, okay, that's nothing. Turn away and walk and continue what they're doing. And I've had that happen. Until you break movement. As soon as you move, yeah.
Okay, so if you're patterned in very well to that environment, and then you move.
No, you're done. Yeah. But it allows you more movement when you are camouflaged well, because, so here's what happened to me. I'm sitting in the tree, right? And it's getting to the, well, it's past the witching hour. It's starting to get dark, and I'm getting ready to say I have to pack it in to go. And, so I did this again, Dan. I looked at my watch, right? I looked at my watch and I hear something. I look right down and it's me moving. I did all that movement right there, right? And I look down and I have a spike buck looking up at me.
It's dark. You know what time it is. Stop looking at your watch.
So this time of day, when that low light time is when deer see the best. Because of the how they see on the UV spectrum,
yeah,
like that.
Right.
So the deer have that same thing like turkeys. They don't have the tapetus, whatever it is. I can't think of it. It's the scientific
term. I'm not
a
doctor.
But anyway, he then, after staring me down for like a minute, went back to his business and just was walking around me. And
couldn't figure out what you were.
Couldn't figure out what I was. Yeah. So it's that indecision there. What maybe a more mature deer have taken off, possibly. But it's like you're those little things you do, whether it's scent control, camouflage,
yeah,
you know, wind and thermals, all these little things add up.
Yeah.
You know, you're shooting practice, so you don't have target panic. Everybody has a little bit of target panic, unless you're just a stone cold killer.
Yeah, I mean, there is that,
yeah,
but
yeah, it happens.
Anyway, I get it. I get it pretty good.
Well, I always tell the story about the first buck I got coming out of retirement. Right? Yeah. And I shot at it. It kind of like jumped and didn't even thought it was a stick falling out of the tree. It stood there, and the buck fever that I had went away, and I got ticked off. And I knocked a new arrow, and it just standing there feeding. I shot it and got it.
Smoked him pretty good, yeah. But
I mean, it's like kind of like first time jitters type thing. I mean, no matter what, anytime you get a deer coming into you, it doesn't matter if it's a doe.
My sight was going around like this.
It's exciting, yeah, you know what I mean? Because it's getting ready to happen.
But your heart rate gets up all the time. I was talking to a guy at work because I wear hearing aids. You know, I lost my hearing from the military, but I said, I have a channel in here that I can just go to ultra listening, right? At the VA, they helped me out, and they set my hearing aids up so I can just hold it down. It goes boop, and now I got ultra listening mode. The bad thing about ultra listening mode is that squirrels can sound like 10-point buck.
Mm, like an elephant.
Yes, an elephant coming through.
Can you hear your heart?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All of a sudden, I hear a squirrel, and it's coming in, choo-choo-choo-choo-choo-choo, just like sounding like a deer, and I'm like...
Like, I can hear my heart in my, you know what I mean? Like,
because you'll be sitting there,
it's like, come on, man, relax. You've done this how many times before? Settle down.
Sitting there, relaxed, especially in the saddle. You know, you're sitting in the saddle, and you're kind of like kick back, and then all of a sudden you hear, and you kind of move even though you shouldn't, you know. But yeah, so that's one of those things. Everybody gets, you know, gets fired up. I think that's one of the things that people kind of, you know, try to hide. I don't get, you know, shooken up or nervous or whatever. I only missed six deer in the last 7 years.
That almost went over my head.
I don't know. They always jump the string on me. But, you know, it happens to everybody.
These deer in the matrix.
Yeah. So we're going to go. It's still 2 weeks till
spring gobbler.
It's a spring gobbler for us. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I'm really looking forward to it. It is legitimately probably my favorite to second favorite thing, opening archery. But man, do I love spring gobbler. It's hard to beat. You know, here you are, beautiful spring, and just the sound of a gobbler going off at first light. There is nothing like it in the world. Makes all the hair on the back of your neck stand.
I got to rescind something we talked about before. I said I was going to take my bow out for turkey, but because I have not been able to shoot it a lot, it's a brand new bow, everything, I got to think about the ethical considerations, right? Like, I want to make sure that if I shoot something, I'm taking it down. So I think I'm going to end up taking my shotgun.
I'm taking the shotgun, but I mean, I know I'm how many years into this bow.
Mm-hmm.
I know I can grab that bow right now because I just shot not that long, a couple weeks ago, 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I can pull up. I can hit bullseye. I have that confidence in the bow.
That's what you need.
But
I don't have
I
that.
I owe yet. It to the animal. Turkey's a totally different game. You want to talk about aim small, miss small?
Yeah.
That, a turkey's different. That's a whole different game. I think I'm just going to enjoy a good shotgun spring gobbler hunt. You know.
Well, I'm doing it just because I haven't had the opportunities I wanted to have.
Yeah, I get that.
To ready my bow.
I'm doing it to be lazy.
So... I'm excited to get in the woods and stuff. So that's,
well, like we were talking about, hopefully I can get this e-bike ordered and have it sent to me before spring gobbler. That way I have it so after the hunt I can kind of test it out through there, go hang my one cell cam that I just got, that Moultrie that I got, go hang that and kind of do some scouting in the afternoon.
Where are you hanging it?
I don't know.
Yeah, why don't you tell me?
Nope.
Come on, Dan.
You know what? Mossy Oak.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is how you know you're getting old, right? I was like, I have batteries die. Well, one of my cell cameras out there, the batteries died, so I have to go out and put new batteries in it. But they lasted quite a long time, over a year.
Wow.
Yeah. But. I was doing that, and I was like searching through my stuff over here. I was like, where the heck's my solar camera? I have a regular trail camera. It's not a cell camera, but it has a solar panel built into it. It's like a cam park or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking for it, and I go, that's right, I got it in the woods. I totally forgot.
Already out there.
Yeah. No. I'm kind of anxious to go there turkey season and pull that camera and see what's on it.
What do we call the spot? The Newfoundland or the 2 mile joint? What were we calling it?
I don't even remember anymore.
Mountaintop?
It is.
Top of the... I forget. Yeah, but anyway.
Is it top of the mountain?
Top of the mountain.
This is a kind of an unusual spot. It talked about before.
Because it's kind of like the top of the mountain, but it's not the top of the mountain.
Yeah, it's a false top. It's a false top. It's like a plateau, and there's probably about, in places, anywhere from 400 yards to, I mean, it could be 600-700 yards of just flat area, and then all of a sudden it goes, boom, goes up to the top of the mountain. So.
But anyway, I want to see cell service-wise with the cell cam, see if I can link up. If I can't, guess what? I'm going to have an e-bike. This is motor on down the road. But
There's more territory out there to be explored for sure.
Yeah. And then even out promised land, take it out there, see where I can get going, you know, the other way, up on top of the mountain, out towards the gas line or whatever, past that maybe. I don't know. I want to explore. Mm-hmm. I want to see what's out there.
Yep. Well, Dan, I think we covered a lot tonight.
Yeah, I mean, next episode's a pretty good one because it's going to be the 20th episode, which is a kind of a milestone for us.
And yeah.
Hey, if you like what you're hearing, you like what we're talking about, like doing listener questions and all that good stuff and our content, you know, follow us wherever you can get us and wherever you're watching us now or listening to us now, you know, follow, subscribe, and we really appreciate every single one of you guys listening.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks.
And we'll see you next time.
Yep.